The Persecution of the Holy Catholic Church by Tsar Nicholas I of Russia. Excerpts taken from Tsar Nicholas I and the Holy See, written by Father T.J. Shehan, Doctor of Divinity. The evil policy of Catherine II, temporarily or partially arrested in the reigns of the emperors Paul and Alexander, was consolidated and rounded out by her grandson, Nicholas. In the annals of modern persecution, he holds a unique and ominous place. During most of his reign, circumstances made him the dominant factor in continental politics, and he used his prestige to perfect certain traditional purposes of the Muscovite state, prominent among which was the thorough crushing of all Western influence and spirit, preparatory to the assertion of Holy Russia as the heir of Byzantine autocracy, the regenerator of Christendom, and the mistress of the Orient. His dream, says an accurate historian of Russian Catholicism, was that of all despots who are conscious of their power and accept unhesitatingly their allotted role, however fatal its ending. The realization of a triple unity, religious, political, and national, throughout an immense empire and contained every variety of worship, government and climate, the establishment by every and any means of an unnatural unity similar to that which the Russian uniform stamps upon an army made up of 20 races and peoples, the straining in that sense of all the forces of an ultra-centralization that recoil before no degree of violence or cunning, no succession of failures or decrees, such was the supreme aim of Nicholas I. During the 30 years that Providence tolerated in his hands the iron scepter that he seemed to have received from Peter the Great himself, his chief obstacle was the Catholic Church. Nicholas was to learn this in due time. Meanwhile, he set about the absolute ruin of the faith of Rome. He would enslave it by cunning regulations, seduce it by deceitful promises, or overwhelm it by the violence of open persecution. The bureaucratic character of the new empire, as established by Peter the Great, permits and assures the permanency and regular operation of any policy once inaugurated in its Russian state. If we consider the undeveloped condition of the Russian Commonwealth and many human sympathies that feed its hopeless corruption, if we add its territorial vastness, the vague terror of a secret and sudden sanction of every absolute command, the universal ignorance and degradation of the popular mind, the skillful intermingling of racial hate, political dreams, and religious fanaticism, we shall grasp in a general way the ease and the confidence with which a born autocrat like Nicholas took up the policy of his grandmother and pushed it unhesitatingly to that degree of success which the God of Nation occasionally tolerates for the sublime purposes that are later made known to his children. For the greater humiliation of Russian Catholicism and the Holy See, the aged Archbishop of Mohyly disappeared from the scene in 1825, only to make way for an even viler character, Joseph Shemesko. For 50 years, Sestrinitzwitz had drawn from the Russian treasury an annual salary of $50,000, together with other prerequisites, for which Judas price he had sold the cornerstone of Catholicism in Russia, its unity with the See of Peter. But Shemesko was destined to a more wretched fate, that of public apostasy, entailing the loss of the Ruthenian Catholic hierarchy, such as it then was, and of several million Ruthenian Unionites. Ecclesiastical treason is committed on helpless multitudes who have passed away before it dawns upon the world that an irreparable wrong has been committed. For obvious reasons, the agent of it is usually immune from personal punishment. Such a traitor is a father who betrays his children, a tutor who abandons his wards, an administrator who squanders an estate. Joseph Shemesko was born in the department of Kiev and was ordained a priest in the Catholic seminary of Wilna. In 1812 he was called to St. Petersburg as assessor in the Catholic College of the Russian Unionites. The advent of Nicholas opened a way to the ambition of the young Shemesko. In 1827 he laid before the new Tsar a plan for the abolition of the Unionites, or Ruthenians. Nothing could have been more welcomed. It took up the secret suggestions made by Sestrinitzwitz in 1806, and was itself surrounded with deep secrecy until the accomplishment of its nefarious aims. He began by recalling the express intention of Catherine II to expiate the Russian Unionites in the conquered provinces. but after her death the local authorities relaxed their vigilance and even looked with favor on the Uniate clergy. A new case of 1800 treats the Uniates as Roman Catholics and places them under the direction of the Catholic College at St. Petersburg, then, which nothing could have been more disastrous, especially as in 1798 their diocese had been re-established in Lithuania, since which date no more Uniate parishes returned to the state church. What are the causes of this reaction among the Uniates? Szymanko answers that it is partly owing to the influence of the proprietors of the soil. They are mostly converts to the Latin rite, while their dependent serfs continue in the ancestral Greek rite. The Uniate clergy sympathize with their benefactors, the Latin landlords. Moreover, the dispossessed Greek Uniate priests continue to enjoy in their parishes the protection of the Polish proprietor. Greek Uniate priests attend in Latin chapels and churches and even act as curates in the Latin parishes. Even Orthodox Russian parishes quit the state church occasionally and join the Uniate body. As many as 44 had thus gone over in the Department of Minsk. Entire parishes of Greek Uniates had gone over to the Latin rite in White Russia and in Lithuania. Similarly, numerous families and individuals. He did not add that this was done in the hope of preserving their faith and escaping a formal apostasy to the state church. Szymanko goes on to insist on the simultaneous education of the youth of both rites in the same seminaries. At the same time, the wealth and social position of the Latin clergy reacts strongly upon the Greek Uniate clergy. Had time been granted to the Empress Catherine, she would have completely abolished the independence of the Ruthenians. When Catherine tardily nominated an archbishop, Litovsky, of White Russia, he was urged, adds Szymanko, to obtain from Rome the restoration of the Ruthenian rite as it existed before the Council of Zamosk, the abolition of the commemoration of the Pope at the Mass and the Filioque in the Creed. What would be her attitude, he argued now, when the clergy of White Russia and Little Russia no longer conceals its preference for Latinism? Russian writers usually speak of Catholicism as Latinism. National pride and suspicion are thereby made auxiliaries of systematic distortion and mendacity in matters of religion. In order to check the growth of Catholicism among the Russian Uniates, Szymanko proposed to the Tsar the following measures. First, the creation of a special ecclesiastical tribunal for the Uniates, with the view of checking any additions to their rites and of compelling the exact observance of its ancient elements. This was aimed at the feasts and devotions with which the Ruthenian worship had been enriched since the 16th century, through contact with Catholicism. Second, the diminution in number and the territorial extension of the Uniate diocese, and the nomination to these few vast sees of bishops thoroughly cognizant of the imperial purpose and willing to execute it, i.e., traitors to Catholicism. Third, the creation of special schools and seminaries for the Uniates, from which all Latin students and influences should be carefully excluded. Fourth, the diminution of the Basilian convents, and their subjugation to the diocesan authorities. As the latter were now known to be traitorous agents of Catholicism, this was a double blow at Ruthenian monasticism, hitherto a very strong bulwark of the faith amid the disorder and ruin of the last 50 years. It was this subtle recasting of the discipline, education, and administration of the Ruthenian communities that, as we shall see, finally brought about the almost total extinction of Catholicism among the Uniates. These measures aimed at a gradual but sure segregation of the latter from all spiritual contact with their Latin brethren, at the suppression of all protest on the part of their shepherds, at the official distortion of the theology and history of Catholicism, at the extirpation of all lively piety and ecclesiastical independence among the clergy, and at the extinction of all ancient habits and customs that could in any way remind the Uniate peasantry of the center and head of Catholicism. Had Thomas Cromwell and his descendant Oliver Cromwell had been gifted with the perpacity of the priest of Holy Kiev, what a wreck that might have made of Irish Catholicism! These few and large and simple measures, stubbornly carried out in the spirit of the curial advisers of Catherine, Calvinists, Jansenists, Voltairians, Gallicans, Fabronians, compassed the spiritual ruin of several million of innocent Russian peasants, inaugurated a persecution of unexampled tenacity and ferocity, and blasted indefinitely the hopes of ecclesiastical unity that Rome had so long and so tenderly nourished in Lithuania and the Ukraine. One more suggestion was made by Shemesko: the purchase of consciences at the price of money and honors, increases of salary, new and special insignia, and frequent subventions to the minor clergy, as proposed as arguments of an irresistible kind.